chapter 31. Living entity within the womb of a mother, human form of life, is praying to the personality of Godhead. The previous verse was, when will they be released from this confinement? A prayer to the Supreme Lord for freedom from the miserable condition of being trapped in the womb of the mother. Text 18 and 19 is contrasting human consciousness, the potential of human consciousness or consciousness within the human form of life with that of animals. So it's the unique position of the soul in that human form. My dear Lord, by your causeless mercy, I'm awakened to consciousness, although I am only 10 months old. For this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the friend of all fallen souls, there is no way to express my gratitude but to pray with folded hands. Just a little comment. There was an exchange, Prabhupada exchanging with some disciples in a room conversation. And he asked the 1, 2, 3 question, when were you born? How old are you? What about the 10 months that you were within the womb? You Americans think that you're so intelligent you can't even do math. So from the Vedic conception, the age of a living entity starts from conception. So you have to add 10 months according to Vedic conception to say how old you are. Prabhupada was having fun with this, thinking they're very smart Western disciples. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, intelligence and forgetfulness are both supplied by the super soul sitting within the individual soul, within the body. When he sees, that's Krishna, sees that a conditioned soul is very serious about getting out of the clutches of material influence, the Supreme Lord gives intelligence internally as super soul and externally as the spiritual master, or as an incarnation of the personality of God himself. He helps by speaking instructions such as Bhagavad Gita. That connection with the previous verses. Well, the previous verses let me out of this particular condition, and Prabhupada has bumped it up a whole bunch. I went out of the mature condition altogether. Quite a difference. Relief from some immediate circumstance and relief from material circumstance of any kind. The Lord is always seeking the opportunity to reclaim the fallen souls to his abode, the kingdom of God. We should always feel very much obliged to the personality of Godhead, for he is always anxious to bring us into the happy condition of eternal life. There is no sufficient means to repay the personality of Godhead for his act of benediction. Therefore, we can simply feel gratitude and pray to the Lord with folded hands, which is this verse. This prayer of the child in the womb may be questioned by some atheistic people. How can a child pray in such a nice way in the womb of his mother? Everything is possible by the grace of the Lord. The child is put into such precarious condition externally, but internally, he is the same, and the Lord is there. By the transcendental energy of the Lord, everything is possible. When we were discussing these verses previously, Karma Rupa was asking, he asked it twice, is it all living entities pray like this, or just some living entities pray like this? And it's some living entities pray like this. And it's a special benediction, special good fortune. The potential of higher consciousness in the human form of life is available because of the form of life. That's the next verse, in contrast with the animal form of life. But not all human beings or souls in the human form of life are interested in getting out of the material condition of life. They just want a better one. They want more stuff or less suffering. Because stuff is supposed to mean happiness, and suffering means you don't have stuff or it's the wrong kind. So some persons aren't interested in, most persons are not interested in the eternal abode of the Supreme Lord. So those that are, they're special. It's not that all souls within the wombs of mothers pray like this, but one who is especially gifted, remembrance and the intelligence are given by the Supersoul. So we're hearing from the Supersoul directed individual soul. Text 19. The living entity in another type of body sees only by instinct, semicolon, he knows only the agreeable and disagreeable sense perceptions of that particular body. But I have a body in which I can control my senses and I can understand my destination. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality Godhead, by whom I have been blessed with this body and by whose grace I can see him within and without. At least potentially, because right now he's just seeing misery. And purport has three paragraphs. The evolutionary process of different types of bodies is something like that of a fructifying flower. Just as there are different stages in the growth of a flower, the bud stage, the blooming stage, and the full-fledged, fully grown stage of aroma and beauty, there are 8,400,000 species of bodies in gradual evolution, and there is a systematic progress from the lower species of life to the higher. The human form of life is supposed to be the highest, for it offers consciousness for getting out of the clutches of birth and death. The fortunate child in the womb of his mother realizes his superior position and is thereby distinguished from other bodies, animals in bodies lower than the human being, are conscious only as far as their bodily distress and happiness are concerned. They cannot think of more than their bodily necessities of life, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But in the human form of life, by the grace of God, the consciousness is so developed that a man can evaluate his exceptional position and thus realize the self and the Supreme Lord. Paragraph. The word dhamma shadihi means that we have a body in which we can control the senses and the mind. The complication of materialistic life is due to an uncontrolled mind and uncontrolled senses. Once you feel grateful to the Supreme Personality of God for having obtained such a nice human form of body, and once you properly utilize it. The distinction, so here's just repeating this theme, the distinction between an animal and a man is that the animal cannot control himself and has no sense of decency, whereas the human being has the sense of decency and can control himself. If this controlling power is not exhibited by the human being, then he's no better than an animal. By controlling the senses, or by the process of yoga regulation, one can understand the position of his self, the Supersoul, the world, and their interrelation. Everything is possible by controlling the senses. Otherwise, we are no better than animals. in the final paragraph, real self-realization by means of controlling the senses is explained herein. One should try to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead and one's own self also. To think oneself the same as the Supreme is not self-realization. Here it is clearly explained that the Supreme Lord is Anadi or Purana, and he has no other cause. The living entity is born of the Supreme Lord as part and parcel. It is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Anadi Adi Govinda. Govinda, the Supreme Person, has no cause. He is unborn. But the living entity is born of him, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mame Vamsha. Both the living entity and the Supreme Lord are unborn, but it has to be understood that the supreme cause of the part and parcel is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma Samhita therefore says that everything has come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarva Karma Karma. The Vedanta Sutra confirms this also, Janvan Yasya Yataha, the Absolute Truth is the original source of everyone's birth. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhupada, the source of birth of everything, including Brahma and Shiva and the living entities. This is self-realization. One should know that he is under the control of the Supreme Lord and not think that he is fully independent. Otherwise, why should he be put into conditional life? The Mayavadis try to give their explanation how Brahman is put under Maya. And it's Jiva Goswami's word is nonsensical or gibberish, or we have a very, very elaborate, technical, confusing, incoherent, that's the word he uses, incoherent explanation of, you know, living entity is God. Very determined. Very determined. And very deceptive. Because, as Prabhupada is saying here, why should he be put into the conditional life? I won't go into a whole long explanation of what the Mayavadi is saying and why it's nonsensical, incoherent. But they do that. And there are lots of people don't exactly understand it, can't exactly say it properly, but they buy into it. Because of this stubborn obstinacy to be God. So back to the message, the main message. Several messages. One is my control of the human form of life is distinguished from the animal form of life in a number of ways, besides it looks different. Consciousness is more elevated. Go the other way. When consciousness is more covered, then there's other forms of life that are appropriate for that covered consciousness. And that covered consciousness exhibits itself in the form of seeking happiness through the senses in, using Prabhupada's words here, indecent ways. Without any sense of dignity and decency, just enjoying and defending, eating, sleeping, mating, defending without any consideration. And when persons eat and sleep and mate and defend without any sense of decency, just because they feel like it, that's all. Or they don't like something, so they defend in ways that are just awful. Then that's not human life. They may have two legs and two arms. And in the language of the Bhagavatam, it's dvi pada pashu, an animal that has two legs. So the distinction with human form of life is not the body, it's the consciousness. And the consciousness is distinguished specifically by control of the mind and senses. Say it again. If you can't control your mind and senses, even with the human form of life, it's not yet a human form of life. Or another way that Prabhupada says essentially the same thing, repeatedly, human form of life begins when there's acceptance of the regulations of varna and ashram, because the regulations of varna and ashram are to regulate the animal tendencies or the impulses, using this language here, impulses born of material nature. So the impulse says someone is attacking, so you, in whatever way, without any sense of decency, just you defend, or you want something and you go and attack to get that something that you want, just like dogs or other animals, and not even just for food, just because something predatorial. Anyway, without the whole range of what humans that are not, or souls that are, they have been awarded a human body, but they don't control their mind and senses according to the regulations of the codes of Dharma, they're animals from the Vedic perspective. And then go the other direction. Those that do regulate this soul within the womb is saying, I have this capacity and I want to exercise it properly. And exercise it properly means you target the sense and the mind activities towards pleasing the Supreme. So the operative principle is, I want to please the Supreme. I want to be in that connected position with the Supreme, not disconnected position. I want to be connected. That's higher consciousness. That's self-realization. Recognizing, very simply, we're dependent. And it's not embarrassing to be dependent, it's reality, we're dependent. Even to control the mind and senses. We can try independently, but will not succeed because there are other forces acting that take us this way and that way. We're dependent in every aspect, every way that you want to analyze. We're dependent. That's not embarrassing. It's not shameful. It's not, you're not supposed to say that because it shows some weakness. We're dependent. And the one who recognizes that and submits themselves to the Supreme Lord, they become powerful. More powerful than the one who thinks they're independent. Because they have their power strengthened by the mercy of the personality of God, and specifically the power to utilize the human form of life properly and the power to return back to Godhead. So the advanced state of consciousness is to recognize that. So here we have a soul in the womb that's recognizing that. And one other thought that relates to Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna in the chapter 14 of Canto 10. He's appreciating the special mercy, the special merciful nature that Krishna has, as exhibited by how he gave shelter to Putana and her two brothers, Bakasura and Agasura, he personally contacted them and liberated them. So what to speak then of the devotees? And then Brahma says, and then what to speak of Vrijavasis? How do you repay them? You're so kind to Putana and Bakasura and Agasura. How do you repay them? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's nice. He says he can't. So he then, as he speaks to the residents of Vrindavan, you'll have to be satisfied with your own devotion. And it is satisfying. Devotion is satisfying. So satisfying that one becomes Atmarama, one doesn't need anything else but devotion. Because the connection with Krishna is there. His reciprocation is the unobstructed relationship with Krishna. Just like Ramachandra, when Hanuman returned with the news that he found Sita, Ramachandra said, I can't repay you. There's nothing that I have that can adequately repay you. I can only embrace you. But that's the reciprocation. So from the side of the devotee, with folded hands offering prayers, feeling the offered, like we were discussing yesterday with Queen Kunti's prayers, because she doesn't have, one who does not have material shelters, has one possession, and that's Krishna. And one who has that one possession, Krishna, without other material shelters, then they can feelingly submit themselves with love and service to Krishna. And in return, they do have something. They have Krishna. And that means their relationship of loving service to Krishna. That's a very wonderful ideal. And our life should be cultivated in that direction. Means on the one side, diminishing, like this soul is doing, his affinity for misusing the valuable human form of life and going for temporary things and trying to find happiness and all that. Letting go and cultivating instead in its place this affinity for Krishna, attraction for Krishna by hearing. As we do on a regular basis, hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing messages of the Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's reference after reference, quote after quote, giving these different statements indicating what our real position is. So much so at the end, you go, all right, all right, all right, I get it. Take shelter of Krishna exclusively. That's what this soul is doing. We'll hear what happens after the soul comes out of the womb of the mother and forgets. Like we may also forget. Krishna is the source of that forgetfulness. Krishna is the source of remembrance. So we have to keep our attention on Krishna in all circumstances, not just the difficult ones. Any discussion?
Okay. Yeah. It seems like we tried a really dangerous path in the sense that trying to be dependent on Krishna, you know, you receive a lot of things from Krishna, so as byproducts. Mm-hmm. And those, for instance, like when you do devotional service, even though you're not supposed to be the enjoyer, you still derive bliss and happiness as a byproduct. And the thing is that it seems like all these things that you get, it's very easy to deviate from keeping Krishna in the center and then, you know, start enjoying that.
Well, the remedy or the medicine is gratitude. Exactly what Prabhupada is saying here. Gratitude in its more mature stage is love. So when someone offers you something out of love, you don't say, no, I can't take that something because thou tried to be the enjoyer. But that's like what Prahlad Maharaj said. He didn't want for the sake of the, he didn't want even liberation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches. But if the Lord wants, you know, part of love is you reciprocate. You give and you receive, it's not just. But the receiving is not now I got my return for my investment. Not a business or entrepreneurial mentality. It's just an exchange of love. One accepts. Here's a gift, and one receives a gift, and here's a prasadam, and one receives a prasadam, and one discloses what the loving exchanges are there. One hears one's mind, another's mind exposed in confidence in the loving exchange. So when it's the medium of loving exchange, it's nice. And if we get, yes, there's danger, and then we forget. So go to the side of praying for that remembrance, continued remembrance. Not block the reciprocation of love. Krishna's giving and you're grateful. And you want to more. Or continue in that relationship. Srila Prabhupada, yes. Yes, go ahead.
Maharaj, you said Krishna cannot repay his devotee. And,
he does. It says he cannot, but he does. He cannot, and then he does.
He does.
He does. He enters the hearts of his devotees and reciprocates. So you can say, is there something that Krishna cannot do? Because if something that he cannot do, then he's not God. He cannot, and then he does. He just doesn't. He doesn't repay in this entrepreneurial way. He repays in terms of his affection and love. Immediately, exactly corresponding to the affection and love of his devotee. He does. He cannot, and then he does.
Can you give us some examples how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees?
You've seen that picture of Gopa Kumar returning to the spiritual world. Very beautiful description. Krishna embraces him. They see each other, and he runs toward Krishna, and Krishna runs towards him and says, Gopa Kumar, Krishna, Gopal. They both faint. Balaram chastises Gopa Kumar. Look what you did, you made Krishna faint. Krishna comes to external consciousness and he sees Gopa Kumar, he just comes and embraces him. Where have you been? You've been away for so long. I was waiting for you to come. I was thinking, maybe in this lifetime he'll come. But you didn't come. So then the next lifetime, then maybe you'll come. But you didn't come. And so many lifetimes passed. Finally I came myself. I was Jana Sharma, the one that gave you your mantra. Now you come, please never leave. There's an example.